Welcome to a special ESRI podcast. I'm Sarah Powell from ESRI, and I'll be your host today. BIM and geographic information systems are increasingly being recognized as symbiotic technologies that can help architects, engineers, and construction professionals build within and under budget while complying with stringent regulations to save lives in the event of disaster. Hear Kate Whittles from HR&A Advisors investigate how the merger of two proven AEC technologies is overcoming two of the biggest challenges in AEC today.
Hi, Al. Thank you for joining us. You've had a long focus on the area of critical infrastructure from the time the term was really coined during the aftermath of 9/11. Where do you think we are today in safeguarding our critical infrastructure, and how can we make it more resilient?
Well, there's certainly been a lot of attention paid to the idea of critical infrastructure. And we know certainly at the federal level that they've gone to great lengths to collect hundreds and hundreds of layers of federal critical infrastructure, because following 9/11, as I understand it, there was no one place in the federal government where all the infrastructure from all the various types of operations and kinds of industries and government institutions. There was just no one place where all that was stored. But I've seen at the local level where the data is a lot more detailed. At the federal level and the state level, it's somewhat generalized because it covers such large areas. But at the local level, it's very specific to a branch coming off a transmission line going to a building. And that kind of detailed information just simply wasn't available. And many of the utilities and the infrastructure agencies resisted sharing data even after 9/11. So that when New York City was hit with Sandy, we still had a massive infrastructure data deficit. We were not able to properly analyze what was vulnerable. And so we took tens of billions of dollars in damages to our infrastructure because we just had no way of being properly prepared for it.
How would you define critical infrastructure?
Critical infrastructure is the infrastructure you need to allow life to survive and civilization to function, especially in cities, but it covers suburban areas and rural areas, actually, which is often the source of utility supplies.
You said that New York City, we weren't prepared for Sandy, but in the post 9/11 world, when we were kind of very aware of the critical infrastructure and the need to safeguard it, were there lessons from that time that you wish we still carried on in terms of how we were protecting and caring for our infrastructure?
Well, we definitely learned some really hard lessons immediately following 9/11. We found out that there were about 10 sources of underground infrastructure data, and we found that it was very difficult to collect all that together for the World Trade Center site. It came in different formats, in different line styles. It came in different coordinate systems. So it came in different media, so that it was an extremely difficult task to piece together all those different layers so that we could have a coherent picture of what was under the ground. This was really important because we had some massive voids as a result of collapses of the buildings and some very dangerous conditions. And yet it took us about 10 days to be able to piece this data together because it was so incompatible. And we took that lesson right out of 9/11. We were making the case that we've got to do a better job to make this data more compatible and interoperable and easier to access in an emergency. It's been a struggle for the last 18, 19 years to be heard on this subject, not only in New York City, but also nationally and internationally. And I can report in New York City, certainly, there's been some major progress over the past year or two.
Hurricane Sandy was also another critical moment in New York City's history. Do you think that event helped to propel kind of where we are now and the progress that you say we've made in the last year to 2 years in terms of protecting our infrastructure?
Yeah. It's sort of a sad case. In a way, I think definitely Sandy has supported our arguments about the importance of locating the critical infrastructure and doing the analytics about that infrastructure to understand its vulnerabilities. However, it's a pity that prior to Sandy, more was not done to anticipate what this kind of a hurricane could do. In particular, there were critical infrastructure elements like the East 14th Street Con Ed substation that were low to the water and extremely vulnerable to storm surge. And yet there was no flood wall or protection for a surge event, which was always considered to be the most likely disaster to strike New York. And that was one of those instances where we should have known better and we didn't. I was sort of vaguely aware that this was a vulnerability, but, you know, it was sort of a little too late when I sounded the alarm.
Yeah. I mean, that was a amazing moment in New York. I remember looking from Brooklyn to Manhattan and seeing just, you know, everything dark for many, many blocks for many days. Have we done anything better to kind of address some of our vulnerabilities, particularly ones that are located where there may be storm surge or they're particularly vulnerable to flooding?
Well, I think New York City has done a pretty good job post-Sandy in that they were able to use GIS to model likely storm surge scenarios and map it against the location of critical infrastructure and buildings along the coastlines and where the inundation would take place. And they have mandated the hardening of the basements and the first floors of those buildings. And I think there's been extensive work that would make us far more resilient should another Sandy come up the coast and hit us. It's just a pity that we hadn't done that in advance before Sandy. But definitely there has been progress made. I don't know how other cities are dealing with this, but I know New York City definitely did a lot and spent a lot of money to harden itself as a result of Sandy.
I know you led the effort for to creating a single unified map of New York City's underground. Tell me a little bit more about that project.
Myself and my colleagues started to agitate for a comprehensive underground infrastructure map even prior to 9/11, but then certainly after 9/11, and then definitely after Sandy. And it was a struggle getting this to the attention of the decision makers until we had a breakthrough about 4 years ago when we started to talk to the mayor's office about this issue. They initiated a pilot project with the Department of Information Technology and Telecommunications to map a section of Queens and underlay, if you will, the underground infrastructure in along that street, and to see if the different various data layers would really work together in three dimensions. And that pilot project has been completed and is being shown around the city and is still being evaluated in terms of how much further the city should go with that. I would add that in particular now, the Department of Design and Construction is very seriously considering adopting the DOIT pilot project and carrying it forward and building out on that pilot, because critical to the city's construction program is understanding what is underneath the street, the subsoil conditions, the obstructions that might delay a project or cause massive cost overruns. And the Department of Design and Construction right now is positioned to be a real champion carrying forward with the idea of mapping the underground in New York City.
So have they been the ones that kind of have identified what the benefits are for having this one-stop map of the underground infrastructure? Are they then also making it available to other departments, or how can other infrastructure owners benefit from it?
This is really early days, so we're still sort of proving the case and developing the design of a larger project. We're pretty sure of the benefits here in that they're calculated almost as a baseline of about 4.7% of total expenditures on capital construction and on the maintenance of capital facilities. When you calculate that against a $5 or $10 billion capital program, you're talking big bucks, really big bucks, hundreds of millions of dollars. And we believe that those kind of benefits are possible and that those benefits may run even far higher than that. There are estimates that with better data, that savings can be as much as 25% of total construction and maintenance costs. So we think we can make a very strong economic argument. It's that economic argument that I think has encouraged the city and the Department of Design and Construction to move forward.
Mm-hmm. And what are some of the drivers of that 4% savings? Is it all time savings? Are there more efficient collaborations?
We have developed some cost-benefit analysis based on federal studies of what happens when all data, construction data, is interoperable, so you can bring it together rapidly and accurately in a comprehensive way. And the federal studies say that that's about a 2% gain or savings when you just manage your data to be more interoperable. And, you know, another federal study talked about making the data comprehensive and accurate. And that was like another 4% gain in savings. So there were a few more studies. We added the potential gains. We came to 4.7 as a very conservative figure. And then we had all kinds of people telling us, oh, it's way more than that. We think we have certently a very strong case for 4.7%. And that's massive. That will pay for all the data gathering and data accuracy that you might want.
Do we have an example in New York City to look to of that savings?
I mean, I'll give you a quick example. Is the Department of Design and Construction found that one project had a large cost overrun because they ran into buried trolley tracks. And now the department is building a track layer from historical maps that will show engineers and designers exactly where the tracks might possibly be so that they would be forewarned if there's a project there that they may run into these tracks and to take proper preparations for them. And that's only one layer. There are probably dozens of information layers that could be brought to bear to give engineers and designers and architects an early heads up about what's underground and to properly prepare them for it so they're not ambushed by unexpected obstruction that blows a budget right out of the water.
How do you identify the layers without having the shovel hit the trolley track?
There's a lot of historical data that will show you it. People were very proud of their trolleys. They made maps of them, so you know where they went. Also, many utility companies, as a matter of course, when they were designing the installation of their electric grid or their gas grid or their water pipes, or they created maps of more or less decent quality, and they did it in their own media and their own coordinate system, but there are records. So it's possible to access those records and the historical record as well to at least get a pretty good idea of what's where. And then we have some new methods using remote sensing technologies like ground penetrating radar and electromagnetic sensors and acoustic sensors and the whole plethora of smart city technologies, which will allow you to go down a street and at least confirm that what the maps are showing is really there, and even show what the maps may not have and say, watch out, we're detecting something that could be a major problem. So this combination of the mapping layers and the remote sensing technology, I think, is the real winning duo for the future.
So if we have a source for the information and we have tools to identify and confirm the information to do the mapping, what are the barriers that exist to advancing the underground mapping of infrastructure? Why hasn't this happened more fast than it has?
I think it really often comes down to the reluctance of utilities and infrastructure agencies to actually sit down around a table and agree to share data. There is an enormous amount of resistance to that. There's all kinds of competitive fears, security fears, and just, if you will, sort of a basic inertia, because it takes a lot of energy to bring 10 underground organizations around the table and work out data issues. So we've just been presented with one obstacle after another to make this happen. And then, of course, there's costs, because there's no way you can build accurate data without an investment. And frankly, until recently, no one really made a financial case for it. I think we have started that process, but, you know, it's still going to cost millions of dollars. And even though it may save hundreds of millions, it's sometimes difficult to get cities and utilities to commit to a few million dollars on speculation that it will save them more later. So a lot of barriers that have to be beaten down.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure New York isn't the only city tackling this. I think you've mentioned that Flanders in Belgium has been tackling this. We know there's a pilot in London by the UK Geospatial Commission. Are there lessons for New York to learn from those international examples?
Yeah, I would cite immediately the Flanders example, because in 2004, a large transmission gas pipeline running through Flanders was struck by an unintentional utility dig, and it exploded, and it killed 24 people and badly burned over 100. And based on that, the fact that the excavating company was not aware that there was a large gas pipeline right where they were digging, as a consequence of that, Flanders created a law that required all its dozens and dozens of utilities to create accurate maps of where their utilities were, and to do it to a common standard so that data could be brought together rapidly and accurately when there was an excavation, so excavators could see, you know, the 5 or 6 or 7 layers of utilities that were right beneath the street where they were digging. That, to my mind, is the most successful example to date of a true and full utility data integration, but it was made obligatory by the disaster that killed so many and injured so many.
Right. There is technology out there to help confirm and validate the conditions. Have there been any advancements from the software side that have helped to contribute to a better efficiency or accuracy of developing these maps? Have you had a chance to witness the advancements in BIM or GIS contributing to this?
Yeah, I'm not really a technical expert, but I can say that BIM and 3D GIS, especially when you can link the two and have buildings flow directly into utilities and utilities into buildings, those advancements have definitely been made over the last couple of years, so that it becomes quite feasible to map your utilities in 3D if you have the data, and to represent that and to show how, let's say, one utility lies in relationship to another, so you know that the gas line is so close to the electric conduit. That technology has arrived, and it's delightful to see, so we know technologically we can do that.
So it sounds like you do have hope that the ease of integration of BIMs and GIS and some of the other technological advances that exist will help to move this forward, even though there's some barriers from government and other bureaucracy hurdles.
Data is the future. Accurate, comprehensive, complete, interoperable data is going to drive economies, is going to drive cities. It's what's going to make us all smart. If you don't have the data, and if you don't have it accurate and complete, you're just going to be a dumb city. And there's going to be whole levels of innovation that are going to pass you by. And you're not going to be as efficient. You're not going to be able to manage your utilities effectively. I mean, it's really a billions and billions of dollar proposition to be able to get your data right and to make it available and to analyze it properly. I see this data and the whole smart cities movement and all the new technology that's coming down the pike as all being working together to make cities more efficient, and the savings will be, I think, astronomical.
That's really exciting. How confident are you that we'll be able to achieve this collaborative underground infrastructure map and you know, capitalize on all of the smart city technology?
There's no guarantee. There are regressive forces that simply resist it because it's new, because they don't believe in it, and they don't understand it, which is the worst of it. And then there are the folks who see it, who see the vision, get it, and want it so badly that they're willing to fight for it. So, you know, it's not a one battle. We know been won in Flanders. We know that the Ordnance Survey is winning the battle in London and Southeast England. We know Singapore is winning that battle. We know that Auckland, New Zealand is winning that battle. So we think that as more and more cities adopt this technology and perfect their data and start to experience benefits, that more and more cities will be aware of it and want to follow suit. Once they see the benefits, I think more and more cities will join in.
Yeah. I mean, if you tell New Yorkers that they're not number one in something and leading the world in it, they should hurry up and get in the front of the line. Right? There's nothing like competition to motivate New Yorkers.
A really big opportunity for cities is that there are so many excavations that take place on an annual basis. For example, in New York, it's estimated that there are 200,000 excavations annually to fix a line or to respond to an emergency or an outage. Each one of those excavations is an opportunity to collect data if you have the right tool, like a digital camera with GPS, so that the process of getting all this accurate underground infrastructure information is actually made easier if you just require all the excavators to have the right kind of camera to take a picture of what they see when they reveal the utilities. So that's one of the little sneaky ways that you could actually build accurate data at a sort of minimal cost.
Well, Al, thank you for this enlightening conversation about the future of data in New York City.
And thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to express myself.
Thank you for listening to this special Esri podcast, and thanks to Al Leidner for explaining how GIS and BIM work together to deliver smarter, safer infrastructure.